Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. The three of us are back together in person. We're not in Mexico anymore, if you've listened to the last episode.
We are tan, though.
We are tan. We're looking good. Mm-hmm. We're back. We're all in Toronto right now in the city. And today, you're getting a bit of a quicker episode because we're trying to squeeze this in. Max, you're about to fly out, to the East Coast?
Yeah, I got to go back to the studio. The band's recording right now.
You just snuck out to record a pod?
Oh, yeah. I said, Nick, keep playing that bass.
Who's going to do the vocals if you snuck out?
I don't know. AI.
Ooh. Allen Iverson. Any new songs that you're going to play on the East Coast to test out?
No.
So it's not like being a stand-up comedian where you test out new songs to see if they work?
No. It's actually a private event we're doing in Newfoundland. So by the time this comes out, we'll have come and
You'll
gone.
Have done it. Yeah.
Mucho dinero.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Dr. Jeff
doing imitations the whole time.
But guys, what's keeping you busy, Shane?
Actually look kind of relaxed, more relaxed than the last few times I've seen you.
Really? I was on vacation last time you saw me.
Well, maybe not on vacation, but the time before that when you were like in here and you're stressed out about the show.
Oh, the show. Yes. It's a nightmare doing a show. I guess the show is almost, it's been kicked out the door.
Nice.
Yeah. We, you know, there's talk of us even doing a little performance at the Rivoli with Bruce McCullough. I don't even know if I should say
about this. I heard about Bruce reached out to you wanting you to do some improv or something.
Yeah. To me and Mike and Bella. And
so what are you guys going to do? Are you guys
Jillian?
Nervous?
I'm shitting my pants. Are you kidding me? Of course. I may look relaxed, but my underwear is
filled with
shit.
So what is the nature
shit.
Of this comedy event if it happens? When is it? Is it April or something like that?
He just said he's going back to do some shows. Yeah. And he asked if we want to get up, kind of like the way that when we saw the last show.
That's fun.
I know. I was like,
why didn't I get that email?
I don't know. Maybe you're too expensive. You're on the East Coast. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Shane's shitting his pants. I'm more like because I grew up such a huge Kids in the Hall fan. Like, I'm like, if I get to get up on that stage with Bruce McCullough for even one bit, even if it bombs, it's like a story I can take to the grave.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's very exciting.
So are you going to do like 5 minutes, Shane, or what are you going to do?
Like a stand-up set? Are you kidding me? No.
What are you going to do? Like sketch comedy?
I like using multimedia. I could do something with that. I'm comfortable with that. Uh-huh. I could even act out a sketch, like if I had to do work improv, let's say, but I made it interactive with the audience. So I could ask the audience to give me improv stuff. And I find being terrible is funny if you can own how bad you are.
Yeah.
So I am somewhat comfortable performing. I'm very uncomfortable doing stand-up or being myself. As long as I don't have to be myself, I can be comfortable.
What would I do, guys, at this comedy night?
You want in on this?
Now that we're talking about it.
Get in on it.
What would I do,
We
though?
Could do a funny song. We could make...
Definitely.
A funny song with you. I'd feel really comfortable performing.
We can make a funny
you.
Song. I feel like that's too easy, though.
And it
Why?
Leans. You feel like it's like, oh, Matt, let's put a guitar in Max's hand. It's almost like
I feel like the challenge would be to to do some kind of storytelling that's funny.
It could be funny if I invite you up and there's a guitar there. Mm. I grab the guitar and you act in the skit. And I'm kind of like, I don't really know how to play guitar that well.
Yeah.
Or at all. Or at all. Yeah, more accurately.
Yeah, sometimes I do. Because there is a difference between stand-up and like comedic storytelling. Because I find that Bruce is, for our listeners, Bruce McCullough, Kids in the Hall, producer of our sketch show. He has many other accomplishments, SNL writer, Hollywood film director. When he does his like live performance stuff, it's not stand-up. It's like a combination between like one-liners, some silly songs, and like storytelling.
Yeah.
And like, what is the difference between storytelling and stand-up?
I think like one-man shows or things like that, like the nature of that style is just a little different than like joke setup, joke setup, joke setup. But I don't know, it's all blurring these days. Like mm-hmm. the way that stand-up is sort of going and the more confessional stuff like mm-hmm. we saw with Hannah Gadsby or...
And my guy, Gerard.
Carmichael, yeah.
You takes know, the pressure off, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's storytelling, one-man show kind of thing.
And when you can combine a musical element and, you know, you never quite know when the joke's going to come in a one-man show type vibe. But with a stand-up set, a traditional one, I think the more laughs per minute is the expectation.
Oh, that's so hard.
Also, Bruce incorporates music, right? He'll sing songs. Mm-hmm. I think he had like 4 songs when we saw him that he'd sort of weaved with in and out where he'd, you know, he's telling you a story that's, you know, hilarious. And then all of a sudden he goes into a song, either something from one of his, you know, an older record or mm-hmm. just, you know.
Yeah, he had a guy with him on stage, his old buddy.
Oh, yeah. Every time I've seen Bruce for the last, like, whatever, it's been 2 decades now or 15 years, he's always got a dude with a guitar.
What are they called? The Shadowy Men? Or
Shadowy Planet. Yeah. Yeah. They like they did the theme.
Theater is so interesting. Because
what a theme, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bung, 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 bung. Speaking
We've
of
got
themes,
a pretty good theme, too. Though.
Well, ours has lyrics. That's harder. Yeah. Right?
Mm. Not to brag. I saw some theater recently. I went to Hamilton.
Wow.
I want to hear this.
Well, because
which theater? Theater
Princess Wells, right on the corner.
Oh, I think the Hamilton,
the musical.
Were you as confused as I was?
No, I was just trying to think of a joke about like just being with smokestacks and stuff. No.
Our friend Felix is working, I think, with Hamilton's Theater Aquarius.
Oh.
So I've been seeing his Insta story. So I go, did Max go and check out a show at Theater Aquarius? You saw the
Hamilton, the musical.
Fucking Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda's.
Yeah. He wasn't there, though.
No, he wasn't there. I think it was supposed to play and then COVID happened. So it kind of got delayed like a couple years. So now it's like finally back. But I was walking down.
Well, wait a second. What's the review?
Well, I'm going to get there.
Oh, gotcha. So you're walking down.
I was walking down King Street, and it was like in the middle of the day. It was like 2:50. And I was like, I wonder if there's any like rush tickets. Because there's that tradition in Broadway where you could like...
Like Rush the band?
No, go to the...
Stop I'm just confused about everything today. Hamilton, Rush, who's on first?
But you go to the box office and on the day of the show, and you line up and you see if they'll give you a cheap ticket. That's the way it works. And it's like a fraction of the price of a normal ticket. So it's 2:55. The doors are locked and it says open at 3. I'm like, okay. I go get a coffee, the second cup on the corner right there, John and King, you know, the corner.
Of course.
And go back. There's no line. I go right up to the box office and this old lady behind the counter, and I'm like, hey, do you have any tickets for tonight? She's like, oh, probably not. You know, this show's been sold out forever. I'm like, okay. She's like, let me look. And then she's like, oh, your lucky day. There's like 2 perfect tickets, like 10 rows back in the first section, middle. Mm. And I was like, I'll take them. And they're $50 each.
What?
Whoa. Yeah.
What, same day? Or
same day, because that's how rush tickets work. No, it was like 8
evening
o'clock.
Show.
Yeah. So then
what are they normally? I don't even know
if
that's
$200. Yeah, okay. $250 each.
That's crazy.
So then I called my niece to see if she wanted to come. She obliged, my 16-year-old niece, Emma. And it's weird. She knew more about the musical. You guys know about the musical, right? Or you've heard the caricature version.
Yeah.
It's about rap music.
Alexander
right?
Hamilton. Yeah. It's about the birth of rap.
Yes.
But it's, I can't really spoil it because it's just like U.S. history.
I saw it on Disney, though. They filmed it and put it up on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Okay. Did it translate?
I kind of zoned out a little bit.
Yeah. There's so many words. I kind of zoned out during the show a little bit too. Like if you're, you know, theater is kind of for old people. Yeah. If you're an old person who has like a little hard of hearing, which I'm kind of a hard of hearing, you can't keep up with the lyrics. Yeah. I don't want to tell that guy, what are they saying? They're going so fast.
Did anyone yell rap music is crap music?
No. Yell that. But you know what's funny about Hamilton? So this guy, you know, he's one of the guys, founding fathers. He helped write the Constitution of the Federalist Papers, which was commentary on the Constitution. By the way, I feel like if you're in America and you love the fucking Constitution, the founding fathers,
you're so involved, like you're so in the storytelling of it all, because you're kind of, it's ingrained in you in school, you learn about it.
Sounds like, this is my shit.
Totally. For Canadian audiences, I don't know if it like really hits the same way. Like, it's a beautifully done play and the songs are great and the production's really good and the performances are really good. But that thing that hits in your heart is like an American. Like, I don't know if people really care about it. So that'd be my one observation about it. But Emma seemed to know a lot of the music. I was like, how do you know the music? You've never seen this. And she's like, it just, you know, comes up.
They are
like,
hit songs.
Yeah, I know, like the Alexander Hamilton. That one's been around.
I'm not going to miss my shot.
Yeah,
da, da, da. Yeah, that's a good one.
I've never seen the play, but I've somehow absorbed that music.
Yeah.
So it's around.
It's around. But did you know that? So he and his wife had a kid, and the kid grew up and became an adult, died in a duel.
Wait.
And not Lin-Manuel.
No.
Okay. You just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And then a little bit later, he and his like old time foe, this guy who's sort of been like butting heads with for his whole adult life, Burr.
Wait a second. I know that Hamilton and Burr have the duel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who are you talking about? The kid?
His kid had a duel too before.
It's a double duel.
A double duel.
Yeah. A double duel. I
remember the duel from the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So his Disney kid Plus. Had a duel, and then he died of a
duel.
I did
not know there was a double duel. There was
history repeats itself.
It's true.
Time is a flat circle.
But there is something amazing about going to the theater, because it just not the same if it's a Disney
I love
special.
The you're speaking to the choir. I've been going to like theater shows. Like, we used to live right by Prince. Right on John and Wellington, and like I saw the Temptation show. Oh. I went to so many shows. It became this thing. I remember I saw what's the Jersey Boys. I brought my dad years ago. I went with Danica, and then I brought Dad and Greg, and it was just this great night. And from that point on, whenever there was like a birthday or Christmas gift, I'd buy my dad theater tickets.
Awesome.
Book of Mormon was the last one. It was good.
Those are all very commercial theater productions. So would you ever go to an opera?
Oh yeah,
an opera.
I'll see anything live where like talented people are doing it. Like I 100%.
Yeah, you know, this is just sort of a PSA for like going out and experiencing culture. Yeah. Because seriously, it's like, you know, when you go, and I heard Rick Rubin talk about this in another interview. It's like he was talking about creativity and what you learning from the masters, and he's like, you can look at a photo of the Mona Lisa, but being in an art gallery and looking at a thing in real life is so much different than just the photo. Like, I get emotional. I don't go to art galleries very often, but when I've been to the AGO or whatever, I get emotional looking at the painting, some of the paintings.
You're talking about like if you're looking at nudies on the internet or going to the strip club.
Yeah,
it's just very different. Exactly.
It's different.
It's just different. I'm so fascinated by live performance in any sort of production, meaning like we just got back from resort. I know you didn't go to the theater and check out the shows at night. I think you did before we got there.
I saw the magic show. Yeah, yeah, I got a little misty.
That was just the toxic smoke machine.
I had other stuff going on there. Yeah.
Like they'll have like, you know, they'll have a chorus like of dancers come out, and I'm like, who are these people that travel from resorts? Like this, they're doing Monday at this resort and then Tuesday, whatever resort. And I'm just like, but these are people that are professionals working whatever circuit. There's people on cruise ships and in every town you ever go to. And I'm just so fascinated that people that make their sort of life in the arts in that way, like, oh, I'm a dancer. You know, I do matinees at whatever theater in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a cool profession.
It is.
That's my grandpa did that to a degree, right?
Yeah. I love it. I'm fascinated by it. And sometimes in my brain, I'm like, oh, in another life, like if I was a little bit more like runaway enjoying the circus type, you know, that seems like it would have been a really fun. So I think do you think that like people, it feels like the sort of thing you do from like 18 to 30.
Yeah.
And then you want to settle down maybe. I don't know.
There's something, the teamwork that goes into a production is love so it. Cool too. Like when you're doing a live show and then like, you know, you get the gaffers and the lighting people and the directors and something, it's just a team effort.
The camaraderie.
It's so fun.
Like, it's,
have you seen Poker Face, by the way?
No.
The TV show with Natasha Lyonne?
It's like, it's by Ryan Johnson.
Oh, okay.
The Knives Out
director. Yeah.
And it's kind of like a retread of Columbo.
Oh,
one more thing. Like, I think she, I had to do my Columbo.
Does she do that?
I don't
kind
know.
Kind of. She's sort of how she sounds.
I think it's, I don't know if it's like a reboot of Columbo with her in that role or if it's inspired by her, heavily inspired
Wait,
by her.
She does the voice too? Not only the catchphrase?
No, but she has a raspy New York kind of accent.
Does she have a catchphrase though in this?
No.
I'm dying to see it. I heard it's great.
It is. Okay. So I think it's 9 or 10 episodes, and each episode is an hour long, and each is its own murder mystery. So it's like, but she's always the common character. She's sort of like barnstorming around. Yeah. So it's really fun. And in each cast, like the first episode, Adrian Brody's in it. And I think later Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it. And so there's recognizable.
Adrian Brody or Adam Brody?
Adrian Brody.
Got you. Not the OC guy.
Yeah, no, no.
The piano guy.
Yes. But they had, the latest episode I watched this morning was about community theater and a murder mystery that happens with these, like, these kind of washed up Hollywood TV actors that go back and do a theater show together. But they had a joke about Ben Franklin, the musical that was playing at the shitty little theater. And it was like, it was a spoof on Hamilton. And they were like rapping along. And it was good.
Did you guys, I spent a large portion of my young life, like watching A&E in the afternoon, like watching like McMillan and Wife and like Columbo and all these. Did you guys ever get into like those shows? Like Murder, She Wrote?
Murder, She Wrote. That was on Angela Lansbury.
The idea of those shows. They were good shows to kind of like fall asleep to on the couch and get cozy, but never really watched them.
They feel like comfort to me, which I guess is kind of what you're alluding to.
What I wonder, and I tweeted this the other day, is okay, so Knives Out comes out and everyone's like, this is so fun. It's like funny murder mystery, like ensemble cast, and they made the sequel, which people didn't like quite as much, but I still thought was fine.
Glass Onion.
Yeah, Glass Onion. And then there's this show that Rian Johnson, he's like become the guy. Why only in the last like 2 years has Hollywood discovered that people love this shit? Like, I feel like it's like such a no-brainer entertainment, like kind of everybody is satisfied by it. Like, why hasn't this genre existed in any significant way before 3 years ago?
Well, it's cyclical, and I don't know if this is ground zero. Maybe Shane or Max or Ash, who's here, can think of something that predates, but that first season of White Lotus, which essentially is like there's a murder and then you have to solve it over the course of 10 episodes or whatever it is. It seems like, I just think like everything's cyclical. It's like, and then we'll get back into like sci-fi heavily again. And it's like, someone's like, why is everything a zombie show 10 years ago? And then we kind of tapered off, but now Last of Us is back, but that's not really kind of it's a zombie show, but it's really more about people.
Remember when vampires were hot?
Fucking right.
Yeah,
show me something along. Remember when volcanoes were big? Remember Dante's Peak and Volcano?
And Comets. Smash. There was Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Were you Armageddon or Deep Impact?
Oh, that's a great question. Well,
everyone our age was Armageddon.
Yeah,
and the song too.
Yeah.
Oh, is it like the best movie song of all time?
It's pretty damn good.
What about, and I don't want the world to see me?
That's
like changed that guy's life.
Oh, is that
City of Angels?
City of Angels with Nick Cage and Meg Ryan.
Oh, that was, I didn't even realize. I just think that is.
Yeah. He has the telescope in the video. And anytime he looks through the telescope, it's Meg Ryan.
Yeah. Okay, those two are up there. What else?
She's sunbathing with the shirt off. It's really creepy, actually.
Really?
No. Oh. I don't know. Nick Cage is the creepy angel with the telescope.
Oh, what about Hero, Nickelback featuring Josie Scott or Chad
Spider-Man?
Kroger? Yeah, Spider-Man. That's a good
song. Josie Scott, by the way?
I don't know. I think it was in Seether or something.
Well, what a moment in time for Josie Scott to get on that track.
And a hero. Oh, yeah, My Heart Will Go On. Yeah.
Ash, all credit to Ash. She just wrote that on her phone and showed us. My Heart Will Go On is probably the biggest.
What's My Heart Will Go On?
Celine Dion, Titanic.
Oh, yes. That's a big hit.
Yeah.
And that instrument. It's like it's some Irish whistle or something. Or what is it? What is that thing?
I don't know what it is.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What about rock? It's what we're all about. It's what we live for. Wasn't that Spider-Man?
I don't know.
No, Sum 41 did a Spider-Man one.
I think it was like one of the Spider-Man sequels.
Celine
that was the glory days. I feel like we must have talked about the... what's the soundtrack? Not Gorillaz. What's the soundtrack? Ben Folds 5 has a song on it. Air coming up for air. It was the biggest. Puff Daddy had a song on
Godzilla?
It. Godzilla.
Godzilla,
not Gorillaz.
Oh, yeah.
And he covered Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, that was a good soundtrack.
And he did that on SNL. I always talk about how Metallica did one of the best, most impressive SNL performances I saw with Give Me Fuel, Give Me Fire, Give Me That Which I Desire. And then they go into the halftime. It's like, and I'm like, they melt. I was like, for the first time in my life, I came home like drunk one night. I was like 17 or something. I was like, I get metal. Like, I get it. I got the Metallica appeal from that SNL performance. Anyway, maybe the second best SNL performance I saw, and just off memory, was Jimmy Page and Puff Daddy on SNL doing the. So it's like they sample Kashmir. So Jimmy Page does a. And then Puff Daddy just like fucking gives like a face blistering rap version or whatever his version of the song. Godzilla trying. The 90s, man. It was a different time.
It was cool.
Bruce Springsteen did one of his big songs. Like, what's the
Streets of Philadelphia?
No, but then Secret Garden.
Garden was big for Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
There's one of his huge hits, Born in the USA, I think. That was originally written for a movie. And then he took it back.
Oh, interesting.
I was listening to a podcast and I thought you'd be interested.
Tom Cruise had a film. No, maybe it was later than that.
He did Born on the 4th of July. Yeah.
I wonder if it was for that movie. But I feel
I know
the
they had to rename the movie. I want to know what podcast.
That song's an interesting song too, because it's like people use it as like a anthem in America, but it's like a Born in the USA, but it's essentially an indictment about how like no one get, like we basically abandoned Vietnam vets when they came back. And it's almost ironic. The chorus is like
Born in the USA.
It's like this is what you get.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I always found that fascinating, but yeah, I guess Born or Streets of Philadelphia might be. Is it My Heart Will Go On is the biggest movie soundtrack song of all time? Oh my God. Everything I Do. Ash has got the bangers.
What movie is that
Robin
for?
Hood with Kevin Costner. And then what's his name there? Bond. Sean Connery shows up at the end as like King Richard or something.
Okay.
And that
I think
song
the
is
movie
huge.
Has to be huge for it actually to be Everything one of the top. Because that song's huge, but the movie didn't seem that huge.
Well, you can't find, the video is just the movie clips. And then Bryan Adams like on a piano, but it keeps cutting to like, you know. Kevin Costner doing a questionable English accent.
Celine wins it, I think.
Yeah.
That's probably
biggest my favorite, song, biggest movie.
My favorite, though, is Aerosmith, though, when it was the thing.
Yeah. Who wrote that? Dan Warren or Carole King or something that? It's not, Aerosmith didn't write it. I know that. And I don't think the band's on it. So I just remember when they played at the Oscars, it was almost like Joe Perry and the boys were kind of just like air guitaring. Because really, it's just Steven over like, you know,
were they pissed
strings
about
and an orchestra and all that stuff.
Did you know Dude Looks Like a Lady wasn't written for Miss Doubtfire?
Oh, really?
You didn't know that? I was joking, but Max actually didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Are we still allowed to like that movie?
Mrs. Doubtfire?
Yeah, does that hold up?
It's a good question. I don't know. I've also investigated whether Dude Look Like a Lady. I got that title out good. Dude Looks Like a Lady. I'm like, is it transphobic? Is it transpositive? Because it's almost like there's the line, like it's like you can never judge a book by its cover or who you're going to love by your lover.
I think it's positive. Blind.
I think so too, but I don't know how history views it. Maybe, you know, we're not the ones to judge, but it didn't feel mean-spirited, but apparently it was written about Vince Neil, who I guess they were all hanging out backstage and Vince Neil, who sings for... Who's got it?
Not Motley Crue.
Thank you. Motley Crue. I think it was Vince Neil. It was one of those hair metal bands.
Vince Neil sang for Motley Crue, for sure.
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
And I guess they were all backstage having a time, as the lyric says. And he had his back turned to them. And I guess his butt looked good. And the Aerosmith guys are like, ooh. And then it turned around and it was Vince Neil or something. They're like, oh.
Dude looks like a lady. That's cool.
I did that trick on Instagram once. I was wearing really tight spandex pants. And I had Alex film my butt all the way up. And then I turned around. And then, one of my friends was like, damn you, Shane.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I love it.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Speaking of the theater,
I had a theater date on Saturday night.
Wait, another theater date?
Yeah.
Look at you.
But you know what was interesting about it? What? It was in my own home.
Oh.
It was a
is
live.
Is this an ad read?
It was a live theater date with Chris Rock on Netflix special.
Oh, the perfect segue. Hey, doesn't exist.
It was fun though. Book Club Maddie came over, and my neighbor Jimmy came over.
Okay, was it fun because the comedy was so good, or because it was fun to chat along to how bad it was?
No, I thought it was a great. I liked the special.
Really? Yeah. Also, you're in the minority.
Your boy Maddie loves Chris Rock.
Yeah, no, I love Chris Rock.
I thought it was good. I don't know, like first of all, I should say that watching it, a live event on Netflix, was kind of fun. Like, just yes. Like it felt like a live sporting event or something.
What'd you
like
think
that
of the pre-show though?
I didn't watch it. Oh, okay. I got there right at 10 o'clock.
Gotcha. You get the show just for Chris. Because the pre-show was all live from the Comedy Cellar, I think, in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And like David Spade and Danny
Connery. Oh, yeah.
It was,
I saw them
and
afterwards.
Leslie Jones did a bit. And it was just like, that was very, you know.
It felt like the opposite of what they're good at.
Yeah.
Which is like, what they're good at is being a little crude and I don't give a fuck. And I'm like,
they were still crude. It's just their bits weren't good. Mm. And it was live, so it was kind of uncomfortable. And people in the audience were kind of like, oh, cameras are on us. Anyway, I thought the Chris Rock, I watched it. Yeah, I watched the first, I'd say 25-30, and then the baby woke up. I was on solo parent duty all weekend because Danica was away for her 40th birthday with one of her friends. Mm. And so I was like, I'm going to watch as much of this until the baby wakes up, because she always wakes up her night of burn 11. Had to go. But I thought my initial thoughts were this is really lit bright, and and I could feel almost, and maybe this is just I felt like I could feel Chris feel that it was live, that all these people were watching live. It felt like he was, I think Shane mentioned, it felt like he was rushing through his bits a bit. It was like the energy of like the, oh, like a million people might be watching this at home.
Yeah.
Seemed to mess with his rhythms, you know? Yeah. And like a lot of the comedy specials we watch too are edited so well that it's like you're tight on the face for the right punchline. It's like this camera's moving here. This just felt very like, I don't know.
It felt a little like an impersonator to me.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Weird. And it's always tough for me when a person who's old, over 50 starts talking about woke stuff.
I couldn't believe he went
it
to all those bits.
It does feel like the get off my lawn a little bit type of vibe.
I thought some of the jokes were around that were interesting, but when you set it up as like, well, let's talk about woke culture. It's like, I wish the entry point could have been a little more interesting, because as you say, it is get off my lawn territory as soon as you start presenting it like that.
10 minutes in, I just looked at Alex. I was like, we have to shut this off.
Really?
Right?
Yeah. It's so funny because
I love Chris Rock.
In the room at our house, people were laughing, having a great time.
What was a joke that got a laugh?
I can't remember. Okay. I don't remember.
There's nothing that stood out or a theme.
I thought the way he the way he talked about his entitled daughters was kind of funny.
That bit was all right.
Yeah. I like him the joke about like Jay-Z would date Beyonce if she worked at Burger King. But not the opposite.
That punchline was great.
I thought that was funny.
I mentioned that one to Shane. Punchline, and he did his thing where he talked about Snoop being in all the commercials. I can't remember who he compared Snoop to, do you guys remember that? Where he's like, when did Snoop become someone that does a lot of commercials or whatever? And then he's like, I'm just joking. I don't need another rapper mad at me.
Yeah.
That's, he so lays he that. Yeah. Then he does it with the Jay-Z where he's like, Jay-Z's beautiful, or sorry.
I don't need Jay-Z mad at me. Yeah.
I don't need another rapper mad at me. Then he goes into what everybody's waiting for, which is, will he address Will Smith?
Yeah.
I like that he screwed up the punchline a little bit.
Yeah,
well, that's kind of endearing.
I just felt like it was memorable because it was like, oh, all the things you're talking about was a little brightly. Like he was a little off his game, but like it just felt like the stakes were higher or something like that.
Yeah, live is fun. Anything live, because it's almost like you're on stage rooting for the performer because it's live, and you being a live performer yourself, you probably have special empathy or whatever.
Well, and when he messed up that joke, because Matt, who was with me, had seen the special, and he, as soon as he messed up the joke, he says, no, it's emancipation. Like he called it out.
You got to start with concussion.
Yeah. And he called it out in the room.
Yeah.
And then a minute later, Chris Cross, fuck, I fucked up the joke. It's concussion or whatever. You know, I was like, okay, that was, I don't know. I just thought there's like, more intrigue there. I'd say like the, I don't really have a take on this other than I'm just sort of amused and interested in all the conversation around the special.
Yeah.
And I'm just, it's so interesting because I don't know who is going to come out in favor of thinking that is brilliant versus who's going to say it's problematic in different ways. And that, and I find with a lot of stuff, you can kind of, it's very predictable who is going to be who's the person on Twitter who's going to say this is an issue? Who's the person on Twitter that's going to say we should celebrate this stuff? But with Chris Rock specifically, just where he, like, you know, his background, what he means to the culture, who he's friends with, the fact that he's a comedian, but he's also like kind of smart and wise in his own way. Like, I just had no clue what the response would be. And it's interesting as like people keep on giving commentary. It's like,
yeah.
And even the reviews of it too. Like some people like really didn't like it. And some people were like, no, this is like really daring. And for like a 58-year-old comedian, this is maybe his best special. I've also seen that review, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. I didn't dislike it or love it, if anything, but it was just felt stale. I was just like, the minute he started doing the woke stuff, I was like, oh, I've literally been seeing this stand-up routines now for 3 years. Like, this is what you waited all this time to sort of like come out and basically do. I was like, oh, okay. And then the punchlines just didn't really hit that much for me.
I think another reason why I liked it was because I saw Chappelle January 1st, like live. And I was like, oh man, I was like, Chappelle, like, he doesn't have any material. He's just kind of making it up as he goes. And it's all sort of charisma. And you enjoy it because you're getting to see Dave Chappelle just kind of laughing and making fun of people. And it's not totally put together. And Booklet Maddie pointed out, like, Chappelle's had 4 specials in the last like 2 years. Like, he's just sort of a machine for material. Whereas like, I think I prefer a comedian that's like dials in every joke and every beat. And you don't have to say that like what he did was excellent, but I don't know. I appreciate that level of care as a comedian.
Yeah, I'm out on Chappelle that I'm going to get on stage and like everything is, like you said, on his charisma and his stage presence and his reputation.
Yeah.
So he feels like he's really jumped the shark in the last 5 years. Whereas I thought when we saw him at JFL and that tiny show,
yeah,
I feel like that was almost his peak.
It was incredible.
And he's been worse every year since that day 7 years ago.
Yeah, when he has moments of brilliance, and that's why I think why it's frustrating is because like when he does dial it in, it's the best. It's like when he did that SNL monologue, because they always bring him in like when something in the culture happens.
Yeah,
recently?
Well,
it was on something.
I think Trump got nominated.
Trump won, but then he did another one recently.
Yeah,
forget. Oh, maybe it was with the Kanye stuff.
Well, that was part of his bit, Kanye and Kyrie.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, he's definitely like crafted 8 minutes where it's like every beat really counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I saw him in Toronto in January, it was like, where are we going?
He's too famous and he's too rich. And it's like, what's the incentive to really hunker down and write awesome jokes?
Another thing too about Chris Rock too, is it's like, it's very easy to get on a mic on a podcast and criticize somebody's stand-up bit. I think it's Chris Rock. So you hold him to such a high standard, you know? And maybe if like I saw him at the ACC or Scotiabank last year, whenever he was in town, maybe it plays different. Maybe it's like, oh, those jokes really land. I don't know. But I think that it was more like, I was really excited to see what Chris Rock had to say. And then within the first, I mean, I should have known that special is called Selective Outrage.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, that's obviously the subject matter he wants to cover. I was just like, oh, I thought he was gonna do something like more fresh. And then I thought, okay, he's going to do a unique take on wokeness. And it was like, oh, this is the same thing that we saw in, you know, that Sebastian Montesano, whatever that guy's.
Maniscalco, yeah, I think his name is.
His bits. You know, it is what it is.
Comedy's pretty good at keeping you honest. I mean, if you find something funny, it's an involuntary reaction that you have.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I feel like I'm not overthinking it too much. And I didn't have high expectations for Chris Rock because I saw Tambourine in 2018.
Did you like Tambourine?
Much better.
Yeah. Oh,
but that being said, I still thought that was a fall from grace.
So I thought I really liked Tambourine. It felt very adult. Just the way he was even speaking, he felt like.
Yeah,
sort of,
he was toned down a little bit.
He was toned down. And this one, I was like, oh, this is more of a return to like 90s Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Which for me felt like a cheap imitation because he was so high pitched and went so much louder and there was minimal pausing in between. And I don't know. I feel like he got feedback on Tambourine. They're like, where's the old Chris Rock?
Yeah, totally.
And then he tried
to
do that.
Write the banger again, right? Like, where's the guitars?
And I feel like maybe you liked it more because you got caught up into the event style that it was, which I had just done one of those watch from home things with Alex.
Mm.
And it was so much fun. It was the best.
Yeah.
So I know what you're feeling when it's like, this is fun. This is kind of like a night out, but I'm in.
Yeah. There's a great tweet regarding the Chris Rock stuff, because one beautiful thing about the Will Smith slap was that it was discourse anarchism. No one could coalesce on a line for hours. You saw people both left and right, woke and anti-woke, taking every possible position. Was Will Smith defending black womanhood? Was he doing toxic masculinity? Was he assaulting free speech? Was he defending his wife's honor? Were people who criticized him cops? Do more comedians need to be slapped? Every possible take was out there for the posting. I appreciate Chris Rock for nothing else than just being able to like occupy that zone where it's just like, okay, with the special where it's like, I have no idea what people are going to think about it.
I thought his Will stuff was great.
Yeah.
Like it was a very strong close sort of deal. The way he addressed it.
Yeah. I thought it was very good.
Like maybe one of the biggest laughs was when he kept leaning into everyone was calling you a bitch and he just kept saying bitch, bitch.
But then people were mad about that because you can't use that language, you know? So
yeah. Yeah. That's my thing. It's like, I'm not going to get disappointed about the way that Chris like attacks the culture or uses his language or any of that stuff. I'm just more like, oh, find a new angle, man. Like we just did woke. Anyway,
I just want to laugh. I don't know. I don't know how to get there, but just make me laugh. If you're a stand-up comedian, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Hard recommendation for Max.
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch.
If you like comedy, watch. People are talking about it. At least you'll know what people are talking about the next day. Chris Rock did have that one funny line where he was like, he went in to do a bit and the language he used was very aggressive. And he goes, you can't retell this one at work tomorrow. You know, people always go in to do comedians' bits. It was like, no, that's a funny, that's a funny setup. All right, guys. Well, it's been a great hang.
Yeah.
Good times.
Maybe the best.
Thanks so much, Nathan Nash. Thank you so much to Ashley. All right. See you guys next week and have fun. Have a safe flight out to the East Coast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.